Good day to you. This is Kathy Boughton, volunteer reader for Sun Sounds of Arizona. I am going to be reading from The Week. And we'll start off, as usual, with the main stories and how they were covered.
Trump sends National Guard, Marines, into L.A. What happened? California Governor Gavin Newsom warned this week that democracy is under assault after President Trump sent 4,000 National Guardsmen and 700 Marines to Los Angeles to quell anti-ICE protests and described the deployment as a preview of what he'd do in other cities if unrest spread. The demonstrations erupted late last week after federal agents arrested undocumented migrant workers in LA's Fashion District, a Home Depot parking lot, and several other locations across the city. Protests that began downtown outside a federal detention center soon spread to heavily Latino areas in Compton and the suburb of Paramount, where demonstrators shouted anti-ICE slogans while waving Mexican flags. Some threw bottles, rocks, and Molotov cocktails at police and torched self-driving Waymo taxis. Police dispersed the crowds with pepper spray, flashbangs, and tear gas and arrested hundreds. Newsom and Los Angeles Mayor Karen Bass insisted city police could manage the unrest, but Trump sent 2,000 California National Guard members to the city, then deployed 2,000 more and 700 Marines, even as he allowed the situation was very well under control. Newsom sued to block the troops being used as law enforcement. Photos showed guardsmen accompanying ICE agents as they made arrests, calling it a brazen abuse of power. It's rare for a president to deploy the National Guard over a governor's objections. Trump claimed the power under a law allowing the president to quell a rebellion against the federal government. Trump's border czar, Tom Homan, threatened to arrest Bass and Newsom if they interfered with immigration enforcement. "I'd do it if I were Tom," said Trump. In a televised address, Newsom said Trump's rhetoric and use of the military had put the nation on the brink of authoritarianism. "Other states are next," he said. "Democracy is next." Trump and aides repeatedly called the protesters insurrectionists, possibly laying the groundwork for invoking the 1807 Insurrection Act, which gives the president power to use the military to quell domestic unrest. Trump said he would certainly invoke it if needed, while aide Stephen Miller said the administration was engaged in a fight to save civilization. As anti-ICE demonstrations spread to San Francisco, Austin, Dallas, Chicago, and New York, Trump warned that protesters would face equal or greater force than LA has. "We're going to have troops everywhere." What the editorial said? Trump's troop call-up marks a dangerous escalation in his testing of the limits of presidential power, said the Albany Times Union. It has nothing to do with maintaining law and order, as he and his allies claim. Instead, it's an authoritarian show of force and a blatant attack on Americans' First Amendment rights. Calling a largely peaceful protest a rebellion would be laughable if it weren't so dangerous. "Activating the National Guard without gubernatorial approval is highly unusual," said National Review. "It hasn't been done since President Lyndon B. Johnson sent guardsmen to Alabama to protect civil rights marchers in 1965. But Trump's deployment is justified. Attacking federal agents is no small matter, and rioters have looted stores, destroyed property, and pelted police with chunks of concrete. As we learned during the 2020 George Floyd uprising, urban riots can quickly spiral out of control if there isn't an overwhelming show of force early." What the columnist said? "Trump was spoiling for this fight," said Ronald Brownstein in Bloomberg, "and has done all he can to escalate it. The administration carried out the migrant raids in a highly public way, certain to draw protests, then sent in the guard, without even a pretense of coordinating with Newsom. It shows Trump's confidence that his migrant crackdown is a winning issue politically, and laid bare his hunger for confrontation with blue states and cities. To Trump, they're not partners, but hostile territory to be subdued. Progressives like Newsom brought this on themselves, said Nicole Russell in USA Today. They've thumbed their noses at immigration laws, refused to cooperate with federal immigration authorities, and sent a clear message to people all over the world that the border was open. Now, as Trump tries to restore order, local Democrats are making excuses for protesters who've obstructed federal agents and turned Los Angeles into a war zone. It's up to Trump to enforce the law, whether they like it or not. This isn't about quelling violence, said Michelle Goldberg in the New York Times. The right's claim that LA is out of control is pure fantasy. Violence occurred in only a few neighborhoods, and Bass quickly imposed a curfew downtown. Just as ludicrous are claims by Miller and others that the Mexican flags flown by a few protesters are proof LA is occupied territory. The administration's real goal is to intimidate those who might take part in civil disobedience and protest against our rapid descent into authoritarianism. Los Angeles may quiet down, but it's a preview of coming attractions, said William Crystal in The Bulwark. Why did Trump send in 700 Marines on the backs of 4,000 National Guard members? It fits the performative needs of our childish commander-in-chief. But there's more going on here. By deploying active duty military to a U.S. city, Trump has breached another red line. And if he gets away with it, he'll have normalized the practice for Americans and made it much easier to do so again in the weeks, months, and years ahead. Whether the public will stand up against this usurpation remains to be seen. But the Rubicon has been crossed. Musk climbs down after messy MAGA breakup. What happened? Elon Musk waved the white flag in his feud with President Trump this week, just days after writing a series of social media posts in which he denigrated the Republican spending bill, threatened to deny NASA use of SpaceX spacecraft, and linked the president to the notorious pedophile Jeffrey Epstein. After Vice President J.D. Vance and Chief of Staff Susie Wiles urged the Tesla and SpaceX CEO to make peace, Musk deleted several of his posts, including the one about Epstein, and called Trump to apologize. He then posted a public retraction, saying he regrets some of the barbs he hurled because they went too far. Trump, who had threatened to cut billions and billions in federal subsidies and contracts with Musk's companies, was magnanimous, if aloof. He thought it was very nice that Musk posted a retraction. The spat began when Musk criticized Trump's big, beautiful spending bill, which independent analysts say would add trillions to the deficit, as a disgusting abomination. Then it grew personal as he accused the president of ingratitude, saying Trump would have lost last year's election without his support. Musk even suggested he might found a new political party. Tesla stock promptly lost a record $152 billion, although it began to recover when Musk ended his rant. Several Republicans expressed dismay about the rift. "I feel like the kids of a bitter divorce," said Texas Senator Ted Cruz, "but most were clear that they're allegiant with Trump. Do not doubt, do not second guess, and don't ever challenge the president," said House Speaker Mike Johnson. Former Trump advisor Steve Bannon called for an investigation into Musk's immigration status, alleged drug use, and ties to China. What the columnist said? "This was a display of Trump's dominance," said Jonathan V. Last in The Bulwark. "Elon Musk submitted and presented his soft pink belly. Musk may be the world's richest man, but when the president threatened his businesses, nobody stood by him, not even his tech oligarch pals. The message has gone out to everyone who thought their wealth earned them influence, and everyone who thought we lived in a liberal society. Money has ceased to be power. Only power is power. It had to end, said Jonathan Lemire in The Atlantic. The two men were inseparable during the campaign, and while Musk was helming Doge, he frequently stayed over at the White House. But the relationship between the president and the mercurial tech baron had been souring for weeks. Musk was upset that Trump had canceled EV subsidies and nixed his hand-picked choice to lead NASA, and he got into a shouting match with Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent over who should lead the IRS. Trump, for his part, was annoyed with Musk for criticizing his tariff policy and disappointed that Doge's cuts didn't save much money. He began quietly telling confidants he was done with Musk, whom he considered a big-time drug addict. Musk clearly had the belated realization that the returns from his alliance were heavily asymmetric, said Gerard Baker in the Wall Street Journal. His reward for dropping some $300 million on Trump's campaign was lost value for Tesla and significant damage to his own reputation. There might be no better example of Trump's facility for one-sided deal-making. Trump even threatened Musk with serious consequences should the tech mogul donate to Democrats. That threat was breathtaking in its sheer brazenness, said Peter Baker in the New York Times. In signaling he would cancel federal contracts to punish Musk, Trump effectively acknowledged that he uses the government as his personal instrument for dispensing favors to friends and penalizing those who cross him. In any previous administration, such a statement would have sparked a corruption investigation. But for Trump, it was just another Thursday. He's willing to use all the power of the presidency against anyone he considers an enemy. So ends the breakup episode of what was always essentially a reality show, said Nick Cattagio in The Dispatch. Sure, it was fun watching two detestable sociopaths wound each other in real time over social media. But it only underscores how unserious our government is, with its Congress of toadies and its spending bill that will explode the debt. America has become a tremendously embarrassing freak show whose political culture should make any dignified person want to renounce their citizenship. It wasn't all bad. A zebra named Ed was finally caught in Rutherford County, Tennessee, after spending a week on the lam. The African equine arrived in the state as a pet at the end of May, but escaped less than a day later. He ran through residential neighborhoods and darted into highway traffic before disappearing in the woods. Ed was finally sighted by a helicopter and airlifted back to his owners. This is the first zebra to escape in Rutherford County in the 43 years I lived here, said police spokeswoman Lisa Marcassoni. Unlike athletes chasing endorphins, Jill Walker completes triathlons to pet dogs along the way. Since 2007, the 57-year-old has completed 99 Ironman triathlons, each race consisting of a 2.4-mile swim, a 112-mile bike ride, and a 26.2-mile run. She met her husband, Duggan, while competing in 2010. They married during the cycling portion of a 2022 triathlon. But Walker competes for the canines on the sidelines, where she stops mid-race to spend 30 seconds petting any dog she spots. She even calculates dogs per mile, or DPM. Her record is 67 pets in a 2023 triathlon, about 2.5 DPM. If I don't feel like running anymore, she said, then I see a dog and I'm petting them and I start running again. A Maryland man has made it his goal to clear out as many old tires as he can from wilderness areas. Wearing gloves and a fluorescent vest, John Merriman, 62, averages nearly 1,000 tires a year, many of them blocking ravines and creeks. Merriman estimates he's removed 15,000 tires since 2008. This year, he has picked up tires in South Carolina, Florida, and Georgia, and he hopes to clean out tires in Alaska later this year. "He's proof one man can make a heck of a difference," said Scott Zillmer, a National Geographic editor who has joined in Merriman's cleanups. Controversy of the week: Abrego Garcia, why the White House blinked. "Finally, a win for the rule of law," said the New York Daily News in an editorial. Attorney General Pam Bondi announced last week that Kilmer Abrego Garcia, the Maryland father of three who was shipped to a prison in his native El Salvador in March, is now back on U.S. soil. The undocumented migrant's deportation was clearly illegal. A 2019 court order barred his removal to El Salvador due to fear of persecution. But for 3 months, the Trump administration defied judicial orders to facilitate Abrego Garcia's return, including one from the Supreme Court, coyly claiming the U.S. was powerless to interfere in El Salvador's custodial system. It eventually backed down amid warnings of a constitutional crisis. But this being the Trump administration, Abrego Garcia, 29, is not a free man. Instead, he is suddenly facing multiple federal charges over allegations that he unlawfully transported thousands of undocumented aliens across the U.S. as a member of the street gang MS-13. Whether the indictment is solid or not, Abrego Garcia will now have competent legal defense and will be before independent judges. He will have all the protections that are due to him under the Constitution, protections he lost during his disappearance to El Salvador. "This is not the homecoming Abrego Garcia hoped for," said Jonathan Turley in FoxNews.com. "If convicted on these serious charges, which include accusations that he smuggled guns and narcotics, he will face life in prison." As for the administration, it's ended this controversy on its own terms, neither defying the courts nor conceding limits on its power to deport. "Democrats, meanwhile, have committed a historic political blunder," said Peter Laffin in the Washington Examiner. "They spent months insisting Abrego Garcia was a model citizen swept up in Trump's supposedly racist deportation scheme. But during his trial, prosecutors will detail his alleged trafficking of women and children and how his wife repeatedly accused him of domestic violence. Each hideous new detail will remind voters of his beautification by the party of open borders." "That assumes the government is telling the truth about Abrego Garcia," said Mark Joseph Stern in Slate. "And there are reasons to be skeptical. If prosecutors had proof of criminal wrongdoing, why didn't they reveal it back in March and spare themselves months of scandal? More to the point, why wasn't he arrested in 2022? Most of the trafficking charges in the indictment stem from an incident that year in Tennessee, when cops found Abrego Garcia driving an SUV with 9 male Hispanic passengers. Abrego Garcia said he was headed to a construction site. He wasn't detained that day, let alone charged, and Bondi will have to explain what's changed since then, other than Trump's election, and his suddenly urgent desire to find a justification for his blatantly unlawful rendition program. Some Democrats did go overboard trying to portray Abrego Garcia as sympathetic, said Jason Willick in the Washington Post. But this story was never about a particular migrant's character. It's about whether the president can send people from U.S. soil to foreign prisons and hold them there even when courts say it is illegal. That question remains terrifyingly unresolved, said Ilya Somin in Reason. Abrego Garcia's return proves the administration is not yet entirely resistant to judicial and public pressure. But Trump has deported hundreds of other migrants without due process. It's now up to the courts and the rest of us to push for their return and ensure that such a thing can never happen again. Only in America. The Trump administration has threatened to pull federal education funds from New York unless the state scraps its ban on the use of Native American mascots. On a visit to Massapequa High School, Education Secretary Linda McMahon praised the school's incredible headdress-wearing chief mascot and vowed the Trump administration will not stand idly by as state leaders attempt to eliminate the history and culture of Native American tribes. A North Carolina high school has agreed to pay $20,000 to a student suspended for using the racially motivated term illegal alien. Christian McGee, 17, was given an assignment to write about aliens. Seeking clarification, he asked, like space aliens or illegal aliens without green cards, and was suspended. McGee's mother welcomed the settlement, but wishes that instead of removing her son, the school had used the incident as a teachable moment. It was a good week for free assembly after a federal appeals court ruled that San Diego's ban on yoga classes in city parks and beaches was unconstitutional. I personally see this as a triumph of community over a handful of elites, said yoga fan John Nowak, who blamed the now overturned ban on the influence of wealthy beachfront property owners. It was a good week for sob stories after physicists at Britain's Loughborough University created the world's smallest violin. The instrument, etched from platinum using nanolithography, is 13 microns wide. That's thinner than a human hair, which can measure up to 180 microns in diameter. It was a good week for loopholes after New Mexico prosecutors dropped charges against a 16-year-old baseball player who admitted to urinating in an opposing team's water jug during a game. While the act is gross and not right, said Chief Deputy DA Jessica Martinez, it's not a crime in New Mexico. It was a bad week for the fourth state after sovereignty beat journalism to win the 157th Belmont Stakes. The decisive three-length victory, a near carbon copy of sovereignty's win in last month's Kentucky Derby, has sparked talk that journalism's best days may be behind him. It was a bad week for go-getters after Asmir Jerkovic, 19, was arrested for driving a Mercedes E300 at 132 miles per hour on I-91 in Connecticut. Jerkovic, who led police on a high-speed chase, ignoring their lights and sirens, told officers that he didn't stop because he was late for a job interview. It was a bad week for the 19th hole. After health inspectors slapped President Trump's Bedminster, New Jersey golf club with 18 health code violations, 9 of them considered critical. Food at the club is not sufficiently well protected from contamination, the inspectors found, and food contact surfaces are not properly cleaned and sanitized. In other news, the Supreme Court grants DOGE access to Social Security data. The Supreme Court ruled last week that members of the Department of Government Efficiency can access data collected by the Social Security Administration, including the Social Security numbers, medical records, and banking information of millions of Americans. In a 6-3 decision, the conservative majority granted an emergency application by the Trump administration to lift an injunction issued by a federal judge in Maryland. DOGE has said that access to the information will help it modernize systems and eliminate waste and fraud at the agency. In a dissenting opinion, liberal Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson criticized the majority for granting DOGE unfettered access to sensitive data before the courts have time to assess whether DOGE's access is lawful. In a separate 6-3 order, the Supreme Court shielded DOGE from Freedom of Information Act requests while litigation over its activities continues. A couple of stories from the U.S. at a glance. Washington, D.C. Anti-vax purge. Health Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. ousted all 17 members of the CDC's Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices this week and pledged to replace them with his own picks. Kennedy said that the committee members had too many conflicts of interest, and removing them will reestablish public confidence in vaccine science. The advisory committee wields considerable influence over the vaccine approval process, reviewing data and voting on who should get shots and when. Dismantling the committee is the latest move by Kennedy, a vaccine skeptic, to overturn long-standing practices and policy regarding immunizations. The removals break a promise Kennedy made to Republican Senator Bill Cassidy, a doctor, during his confirmation hearing that he would not alter the panel in any way. Now the fear is that the ACIP will be filled up with people who know nothing about vaccines except suspicion, Cassidy wrote on X. Fort Bragg, North Carolina. A rally for the troops. In a campaign rally-like speech at the Fort Bragg base, President Trump attacked political foes and condemned anarchy in Los Angeles while promising to restore the names of bases that honored Confederate generals. The fiercely partisan speech marked a break with traditional protocol, which bars the military from political displays. MAGA merchandise was on sale at the base, and military.com reported that some troops were screened for loyalty to the president. One commander at Fort Bragg said it was a bad week for the Army for anyone who cares about us being a neutral institution. Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth had already begun reversing changes in base names made during the Biden administration. Hegseth claimed that the names no longer referred to Confederate figures, but to other soldiers with similar names. Trump, however, blew up that claim, saying bluntly that Virginia's Fort Gregg Adams, renamed in 2023, would go back to honoring Confederate General Robert E. Lee. Area 51, Nevada. UFO disinfo. The Pentagon spent decades fueling conspiracy theories about UFOs, the Wall Street Journal reported last week. The agency's All-Domain Anomaly Resolution Office, created in 2022, dug into claims about secret government UFO programs and discovered a series of deceptions. Some were intended to hide actual weapons programs. Others may have been part of an elaborate, practical joke that was sustained for decades. The military encouraged rumors of UFOs around the Area 51 site in the Nevada desert in case locals saw tests of weapon systems, such as the F-117 stealth fighter, and a system designed to simulate the effects of massive electromagnetic pulses. Officers also misled subordinates in something akin to a hazing ritual, in which new team members were told of a secret UFO investigation called Yankee Blue, and warned they could be executed if they ever told anyone. The revelation stunned Avril Haines, President Biden's Director of National Intelligence, in 2023, but were not released to the public. From the World at a Glance, Kyiv, record attacks. Ukrainians scrambled into basements and bunkers for shelter this week as Russia battered Kyiv and other cities with the largest air attack of the three-year war. Russian forces sent 7 ballistic and cruise missiles, as well as nearly 500 attack drones in a single night, although Ukraine said it shot down or electronically deflected all but a few dozen of the drones. Several citizens were killed, and many buildings were damaged across the country, including Kyiv's St. Sophia Cathedral. It is vital that the response to this and other similar Russian attacks is not silence from the world, but concrete action, said Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky. Action from America, which has the power to force Russia into peace. Action from Europe, which has no alternative but to be strong. Sao Paulo, comic jailed for jokes. Brazilian comedian Leo Lins was sentenced to 8 years in prison this week for telling jokes that a judge said were bigoted and discriminatory against minority and vulnerable groups. In a viral YouTube video of a 2022 performance, Lin said he made fun of Black and Indigenous people, obese people, elderly people, gay people, Jews, evangelicals, disabled people, and people infected with HIV. What show could be more inclusive? He asked during the set. He even hired a sign language interpreter just to be able to offend the deaf mute. The federal court ruled that Lin's had the right to freedom of expression, but it was not absolute and could not be used as an excuse to make hateful, prejudiced, and discriminatory remarks. Camp Limonier, Djibouti. ICE agents stuck. 11 U.S. immigration officers and 8 deportees have been stranded for weeks in blazing hot Djibouti, an ICE official confirmed to U.S. federal court last week. The Trump administration had been trying to send the migrants, who had all been convicted of violent crimes, to South Sudan when a federal judge in Massachusetts blocked the transfer. Rather than send the plane back to the U.S., administration officials diverted it to a U.S. Navy base in Djibouti. ICE said its agents there do not have the capacity to maintain constant surveillance, custody, and care of the detainees, who are being held in a converted shipping container that is unsanitary and unsafe. Both the agents and the deported criminals are exposed to fumes from a nearby burn pit and are at risk of contracting malaria. The Department of Homeland Security blamed their plight on the judge. Turning to people, Alda's persistence through Parkinson's. At age 89, Alan Alda is busier than ever, said Simon Hansenstein in The Guardian. The former MASH star hosts a podcast series, heads the Alan Alda Center for Communicating Science at Stony Brook University, and continues to write, produce, and act, all despite being diagnosed with Parkinson's a decade ago. At the moment, Alda says of his on-screen work, I can play anyone with Parkinson's. His shakes are pronounced, but he says he's adapted to the disease. I just plan for the fact that everything takes 3 times longer to do or more. Getting your clothes on, taking your pills. I have to type every email 3 times before I stop saying rude things. I write emails to women I don't know, and unless I check, before my signature there are 6 X's. Does the disease annoy him? I rarely get upset at it because I know it's reality. I fell into it this way of thinking that if a button takes too long to button, I have to find other ways to do it. And eventually, if I land on a way that makes the button go through the buttonhole, I feel like $1 million. Alda pauses. It sounds like something I read in a self-help book, but it isn't. It's just the way I found myself reacting, and I'm very glad that I did. Bringing home the dead in Ukraine. Alexei Yukov spends his days engaged in the most macabre of tasks, said Anthony Lloyd in The Times, UK. With a team of 9 volunteers, he recovers the remains of soldiers killed in Russia's war in Ukraine. They've gathered over 3,000 bodies since the war began in 2022. The volunteers bag the corpses, along with uniforms, letters, and scattered teeth, anything to help identification. The dead are sorted at the morgue. Russians are sent into storage to await repatriation, while Ukrainians are returned to their families. Yukov, 39, doesn't distinguish between bodies on the battlefield, saying his task is only to connect the dead with those who loved them. It's risky work. In September 2022, he lost his right eye to an anti-personnel mine. 4 months later, a 21-year-old member of his team was killed when his vehicle hit an anti-tank mine. We work on the front, without guns, and with only the prayers of the parents of dead sons to protect us. Yukov is infuriated by the on-off ceasefire negotiations between Moscow and Kiev, saying a 30-day truce would allow thousands of bodies to be retrieved safely. But that, he reflects, would be a problem for the Russians. If thousands of their missing soldiers suddenly appeared back home in body bags, maybe they would have to think again about the wisdom of waging war. how a trippy therapy saved Cyrus. Miley Cyrus conquered stage fright by stepping outside herself, said Lulu Garcia Navarro in the New York Times. The pop star developed a fear of performing as the COVID pandemic faded, and she found herself singing to packed arenas again after 2 years of near isolation. To cope with this jarring transition, she signed up for a therapy technique called eye movement desensitization and reprocessing. In EMDR, patients are instructed to move their eyes from side to side while being guided to access past traumatic events. "Saved my life," says Myris, 32. Her therapist instructed her to picture her life passing by through a train window and to detail anxiety she felt on stage. "In my hypnotic place, I said, I just want them to love me so bad." And he said, "When was the first time you felt that way?" "Suddenly I saw myself, this sounds so trippy, but this is medical, in the womb of my biological grandmother." Cyrus realized she was inhabiting the perspective of her mother, who was adopted. She then moved through her own experiences, including being a child on a mountaintop in a place I experienced a lot of trauma, in the snow in Montana. Suddenly her loved ones showed up. My dog that died a couple years ago, my grandma, my mom, and they all grabbed me by the hands and we started playing Ring Around the Rosie. And I came out of it and I've never had stage fright again. In the news, Jared Leto was accused of sexual misconduct by 9 women last week, some of whom said they were underage when they were first approached by the Requiem for a Dream actor. One woman told Air Mail she was 16 when in 2006, Leto grabbed her arm at a Los Angeles cafe and asked for her number. She said that in the following weeks, Leto, then in his early 30s, would call her in the early hours and ask about her sex life. The way he talked, she said, it scared me. Another woman, said the actor, now 53, began texting her when she was underage, then masturbated in front of her after she turned 18. Los Angeles-based DJ and producer Ali Tiltz last month reposted a Facebook status from 2012, when she was 17, in which she wrote that Leto tried to force himself on her backstage in a kilt. A representative for Leto expressly denied all the allegations. King Charles III's cancer is manageable but incurable, royal insiders told the Daily Telegraph, UK, last week. The British monarch, 76, announced 18 months ago that he was battling an undisclosed form of cancer. And while the palace has reassured the public that Charles is faring well during treatment, the talk is now that he may die with cancer, but not of cancer, reports the Telegraph. Because of health concerns, sources said Charles is unlikely to return to using Buckingham Palace, which is being renovated until late 2027, as his main residence. Doubts are also emerging that the king will ever be reconciled with his estranged son, Prince Harry. Palace aides had been investigating whether the pair could be brought together when Harry's Invictus Games, a sporting event for wounded veterans, is held in the UK in 2027. Blake Lively this week scored a legal win over her It Ends With Us co-star Justin Baldoni after a federal judge dismissed his $400 million defamation lawsuit against the actress and her husband Ryan Reynolds. The ruling did not address the merits of Baldoni's complaint, in which he accused the Hollywood power couple of seeking to destroy his reputation by falsely accusing him of sexually harassing Lively on set and then smearing her after she spoke up. Instead, Judge Lewis Lyman found that the sexual harassment claims Lively made in a December civil suit were protected by law and could not be used to file a defamation claim. Lawyers for the actress called the ruling a total victory and a complete vindication. Best columns, the U.S. "Hey, don't deport people I know." Jonathan V. Last, The Bulwark. When immigration officials arrested and imprisoned beloved local waitress Carol Hui in April, said Jonathan V. Last, her neighbors in Kennett, Missouri, were outraged. Donning Bring Carol Home t-shirts, they rallied around the hardworking mom of three, who delighted Waffle House customers since arriving in the U.S. from Hong Kong 20 years ago. Hui was released last week, pending further hearings. But this isn't some heartwarming story about the strength of small-town bonds. It's an indictment of the worst people in America. More than 80% of people in Dunklin County, where Kennett is located, voted for Donald Trump, who vowed to deport 20 million immigrants. These voters are culpable for Carol's imprisonment, but somehow are blind to their complicity. They also seem oblivious to the reality that Trump's henchmen are now seizing thousands of hardworking immigrants from restaurants, stores, construction sites, and farm fields. Do they think Carol is the only good person being deported? Do only people you know matter? One of Carol's friends said she's a fan of most everything Trump has done, except that he tore her friend's life and family apart. Mindless voters like her have set the country ablaze. The Epstein files backfire on MAGA. Glenn Thrush, The New York Times. When Elon Musk last week accused the Trump administration of hiding parts of the Epstein files to protect the president, another MAGA conspiracy theory backfired, said Glenn Thrush. Attorney General Pam Bondi and the partisan showmen running the FBI, Director Kash Patel and Deputy Don Bongino, have championed conspiracy theories such as that accused sex trafficker Jeffrey Epstein was killed in jail to conceal his ties to powerful people. Democrats, they hoped, but not Trump. Having promised the MAGA base they would reveal deep state secrets, these Trump law enforcers now find themselves in a trap of their own making, as the true believers demand results. Witness Bongino's glum recent admission that he's concluded Epstein killed himself in jail, just as the FBI said. He and Patel have promised breakthroughs in cases that have gripped the president's base, including the discovery of some cocaine in the West Wing during the Biden administration, the 2022 leak of the draft Supreme Court opinion overturning abortion rights, and the claim that the FBI fomented the January 6th Capitol insurrection. Having raised expectations of spectacular arrests, Bongino and Patel are running a conspiracy theory fulfillment center with unstocked shelves. How AI can destroy your privacy. Kelsey Piper, Vox. Artificial intelligence is about to change privacy in a way that I find pretty terrifying, said Kelsey Piper. I recently uploaded a photo of my son playing on a beach to OpenAI's O3 tool. To my horror, the AI used the pattern of the waves, the sand, and the sky to pinpoint our exact location to Marina State Beach in Monterey Bay, California. Most of us don't worry about our digital footprint because we believe our data will be used only to serve us personalized ads. We've relied on our relative obscurity for privacy, since it would take an extraordinary amount of work to collect and store in one place all the data your online activities can reveal. Your address, phone number, movements, face, web history, friends, profession, political ideology, health status, and sexual preference. But if someone, or the government, were determined to stalk us, AI could create a comprehensive file cheaply and quickly. The government or employers could even use AI to search for activities or ideas deemed illegal or dangerous. Our existing laws are inadequate for this strange new world. And if legal limits are not imposed on AI, privacy will become a quaint concept. Viewpoint. It's pretty clear that the U.S. needs large-scale immigration in order to support its economy. Small, declining towns especially need immigrants. Without immigrants, they'll wither away. But the MAGA movement hates immigration. Not just of the illegal variety, but all types. The Great Replacement Theory, which holds that liberals are importing immigrants in order to demographically drown and disempower the white race and the Republican Party, has become canon on the right, turning immigration into the right's core culture war issue. This belief is the biggest single reason why the issue will be so hard to resolve. Noah Smith in his Substack newsletter. It must be true. I read it in the tabloids. A British Airways flight attendant who disappeared during meal service on a San Francisco to London run was found by co-workers dancing naked in a business class bathroom. The crew member was suspected of taking drugs before or during the flight, which held about 470 passengers. He was staging a one-man disco, said a colleague. The plane was cruising at 37,000 feet, but this bloke seemed to be higher than anyone else. The errant attendant was put into a pair of pajamas and buckled into a seat for the rest of the flight, and was subsequently arrested and suspended. When a tornado approached during a couple's wedding in Portales, New Mexico, their photographer seized the moment for some striking shots. We said our vows, and then the weather just switched, said bride Danielle Carrillo. Photographer Chesnia Clemens decided the twister did not pose an imminent danger. I yelled, "Let's get this picture taken. It's one of a kind," Clemens said. Nothing says, for better or worse, like saying, "I do," with Mother Nature throwing down in the background. As unemployment rises among young Chinese people, a growing number are paying fees to work in pretend offices. For the equivalent of $4 to $7 a day, the companies offer desks, lunchrooms, and free Wi-Fi. The faux workers can pay extra to pretend to be a manager with an office. "Most of us are just there because it's interesting," said Xu Lin, a content creator. Da Neng Mao, a builder, said he hopes showing up at his fake firm may create a job opportunity. And the best columns, Europe, looking at the United Kingdom. Hands that can do little but swipe. Libby Purves, The Times. "Britons are becoming like clutch-phobic Americans, unable to drive stick," said Libby Purves. "Just one in five new cars sold here has a manual transmission. The trend is probably inevitable, given the rise of EVs, and maybe the soothing quality of leaving decisions to a robot suits fretful souls. Yet I cleave to my gear stick. There is something masterful and deliberate about downshifting on a curve or popping into high gear on a straightaway. The smooth growl focuses you, reminding you that despite this age of button pushing and screen swiping, you are not playing video games, but in personal control of a big, heavy, dangerous machine. Most of us, even older workers, no longer do much requiring manual dexterity, while the younger generations have never had to master even easing a gear level to reverse. That has real consequences. Changes like this reduce the palpable necessity for coordination and let relevant brain cells atrophy. Already, medical schools are complaining that young would-be surgeons have spent so much time staring at screens, they need hours of remedial sewing lessons simply to manage a basic suture. The result of all this is that we are losing touch with what makes us human. We are animals, after all, and need to be made to feel it daily. Talking points. Noted. Lawmakers in more than a dozen states have introduced or passed legislation aimed at supposed chemtrails left behind by airplanes. According to a debunked conspiracy theory, the white lines contain chemicals that are spread for population and weather control. In fact, the contrails are primarily composed of water vapor from engine exhaust. Tennessee Governor Bill Lee has signed a law banning the intentional release of airborne chemicals to modify the climate. Similar bills have passed legislatures in Florida and Louisiana. From the Associated Press. The Department of Homeland Security's main hub for terrorism prevention is now led by a 22-year-old former Trump campaign worker with no apparent national security experience. Thomas Fugit, head of the Center for Prevention Programs and Partnerships, graduated from college last year and worked in a grocery store as recently as August 2023. The Daily Beast. Since the start of his 2024 election campaign, President Trump has more than doubled his personal wealth to about $5.4 billion through real estate projects, sales from his crypto ventures, and other deals. The New York Times. To help the Trump administration meet its self-imposed quota of 3,000 migrant arrests a day, more than 5,000 personnel from across federal law enforcement agencies have been redeployed to work on immigration-related cases. They include 1,800 agents from Homeland Security and 2,000 from the FBI, Drug Enforcement Agency, and U.S. Marshals Service. NBCNews.com. A little humor from Health and Science. Clever cockatoos. Australia's sulfur-crested cockatoos made headlines a few years ago when they figured out how to open garbage cans to find food. Now the canny birds have learned how to drink from human water fountains, reports National Geographic. Barbara Klump, a behavioral ecologist at the Max Planck Institute of Animal Behavior in Germany, noticed the behavior while she was visiting a park in Sydney for a different study. She spotted a group of the birds waiting in line on a chain-link fence for a chance to hop onto the fountain, grip the spout with one foot, and use the other foot to twist the handle to release the water. Klump planned her own study of the cockatoos, and after observing 24 tagged birds for over a month, she found that about 70% attempted to work the fountain, and 40% succeeded. Other sources of fresh water were much more easily available, so the birds seemed to be doing it for fun rather than need. These birds, says Klump, they constantly surprise me. Obituaries. The funk rock visionary who became an addict and recluse. Sly Stone, 1943 to 2025. Sly Stone was a musical alchemist, combining soul, funk, and psychedelic rock with elements of gospel, jazz, and Latin music to create the new sound of the 1960s. With his prodigious afro and platform boots, a look that one critic described as the wildest pimp on the block, he was an onstage dynamo as leader of the multiracial, mixed-gender band Sly and the Family Stone. From 1968 to 1971, the group scored hits with buoyant songs such as Dance to the Music, Everyday People, Hot Fun in the Summertime, and I Want to Take You Higher, and influenced artists such as Prince, Stevie Wonder, and Miles Davis. But Stone, an eccentric whose songs of uplift were tempered by darker themes of struggle and disillusionment, had a fall as steep as his rise. He descended into drug abuse and bankruptcy, spending most of his later years living in a camper van in Los Angeles. A New York Post reporter who located him in 2011 described him as paranoid and disheveled. Tell everybody, please, to give me a job. Play my music, he said then. I'm tired of this shit, man. Raised in Vallejo, California, Sylvester Stewart was a musical prodigy who started making music with his siblings as a child, said Rolling Stone. Their father, a janitor, was also a Pentecostal deacon, and the siblings sang gospel harmonies, recording their first single when Sylvester was 9. Adept at keyboards, guitar, bass, and drums, he studied music at a junior college and DJed at a local radio station under the name Sly Stone, breaking the R&B format by playing white acts like the Beatles along with soul and funk. He got a job as a staff producer for Autumn Records and became a familiar voice in the Bay Area's music scene, before starting the band in 1966 that would become Sly and the Family Stone. They were men and women, black and white, and two were Sly's siblings. Their 1967 debut album vanished without a trace, said The Telegraph, UK. Prodded by his label to make something more commercial, Stone released Dance to the Music, an irresistibly propulsive funk collage whose eponymous single shot to the top 10. The band became known for high-octane live shows, and a string of top 20 successes followed. In 1969, they released a triumphant fourth album, said The Times, UK, with its thrilling mix of rousing horns, acid rock guitars, and funky bass lines. Stand yielded four hits, including the smash Everyday People. The band's reputation soared further after their ecstatic 4 a.m. Woodstock performance, wildly hailed as a festival highlight. Then it all started to unravel, said the Washington Post. Strung out on cocaine and PCP, Stone missed a third of his shows in 1970. They all moved into a Beverly Hills mansion where recording sessions became nonstop parties with a drug-addled Stone flanked by mobsters doubling as bodyguards. Stone obsessively overdubbed and erased tracks, degrading the master tape. Allegedly, he would often tell a girl she could record backing vocals and then, once he'd bedded her, tape over her track. The result, There's a Riot Going On, 1971, had a bleak, dissonant sound, said the Los Angeles Times. It was the least significant music Stone released. He grew more isolated and erratic, and in 1974 married his 19-year-old girlfriend on stage at Madison Square Garden. She promptly divorced him, claiming abuse. Stone alternated drug arrests with stints in rehab and disappeared from the public eye. In later years, he performed intermittently and often bizarrely, said the New York Times. He surfaced at the 2006 Grammys, sporting a towering bleach-blonde mohawk, playing keyboards on I Want to Take You Higher, but wandering off stage mid-song. In a shambolic 2010 appearance at Coachella, he told the audience he'd been kidnapped and would sue his manager. But in recent years, his musical legacy was fortified when Questlove featured him in a 2021 documentary. Another film followed this year. Finally drug-free, Stone moved into a house, wrote a memoir, and passed the time listening to records. Health problems had stopped him from recording, he said in 2023, but they haven't stopped me from hearing music.
This is Kathy Broughton, volunteer reader for Sun Sounds of Arizona, reading The Week. Thanks for listening. If you miss a program, you can get it on demand at sunsounds.org/broadcast/info/audio/on-demand. You can hear Sun Sounds on your smart home device.